This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, welcome to Baseball Central for Wednesday, October 21st. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker for your listening and viewing pleasure on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And on Sportsnet 360. Wonder how many more of these we'll have. The Texas Rangers. No, not the Texas Rangers. You got me so mad off air that I got my teams mixed up. The Kansas City Royals. Stop it. The Kansas City Royals can eliminate the Toronto Blue Jays tonight in the fifth game of the best of seven American League Championship Series. First pitch is at 4 o'clock on Sportsnet East Ontario, West and Pacific. The pregame show will be at 3 p.m. on the aforementioned Sportsnet channels. Our radio pregame as well will be at 3 p.m. First pitch on the radio with Jerry, Joe, and Mike will be at 4:07. The Kansas City Royals, humiliating. It was a humiliation yesterday, beating the Blue Jays 14-2, a game in which Cliff Pennington finished. I have known John Gibbons as long as anybody in this city. I have never seen him as disappointed. In his post game news conference yesterday, he was very measured. But I can tell you after the game when he walked by, I was sitting in the outside of the media row. He was not very happy.
How would he be happy?
He felt personally embarrassed by what had just happened out in the field.
I think the Pennington thing at the end of the game was
that.
That takes it to a whole different kind of level. It does. It really
thank
does.
Thank you.
In the playoffs, it does. You know, regular season, maybe you're talking
thank you.
June or July. Yeah, it's okay. You're getting blown out. You throw a position player, yada, yada, yada. When you're in a playoff game and everybody's watching, and it's different.
Yeah.
It just didn't look right.
No. And, you know, he said he kind of made the point about making postseason history.
And not in a good way.
Not in a good way at all.
No.
Kevin, we'll talk about that game, but I want to look ahead right now. You played this game. You've probably been in the tail end of big scores.
Well, not in spots like this.
This is a
little bit bigger, you know.
But I mean, as a professional athlete, you've been part of a team that's been beaten badly, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What happens today in that clubhouse? Guys show up. They go about their regular routine. I get that.
This is exactly why Alex brought the guys in. He brought in to clean up the clubhouse. And for situations like this, you know, you bring in a David Price, you bring in a Donaldson, you already have Batista. You have these guys for situations like this to sort of collect everybody up and say, forget about it. It's like when a pitcher has a bad day, and we won't mention R.A. Dickey, but when a pitcher has a bad day, or a closer. You can say a closer has a bad, you know, game before he sort of forgets about it and moves on. It's one of those games. What can you do? It's, you know, to me, what's the difference in losing 4-2 or 14-2? You lost. The situation may have been a little different. It didn't look as good with the pitching. You're only as good as your pitching. And right now the bullpen with the Blue Jays is not right now good enough to get it done, and we're starting to see the weakness. And to me, it's a loss. You move on. You come out. You do what you do. The first inning, to me, is going to be the most important. I think if you can get Escobar and Zobrist are the two biggest keys. If you can keep those guys off the base and get the crowd into it and get the best offense in 0-0 coming in bottom of the first, you got a shot. If not, everybody's going to be just like you were when he led off with the triple. Here we go again. And you don't want that.
I'll be the first to admit, I said I thought the Texas Rangers were going to be the toughest team the Blue Jays were going to face. Man, oh man, was I wrong. I mean, this lineup, starting with Elcides Escobar. Well,
you have Gordon and Rios, 8-9 in their lineup.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hitting .308 combined together. Both of them are hitting .308. That's, you know, they do everything right. They put balls in play. They put a lot of pressure on everybody. And everybody 1-9 has an approach. You saw even when Pennington came in, they were still swinging at the first pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody knows who Cliff Pennington is. He doesn't pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to go away from their approach no matter where it is in the time of the game. And, you know, you have to figure out some way to not let them do that.
Where did that game get away from the Blue Jays yesterday?
Well, I mean,
bottom of the second.
Well, it's very easy to, and it, you know, you don't want to beat up on R.A. Dickey. He's had a great second half, and he's one of the main reasons why the Blue Jays are where they're at. I want to say that up front, but where you lose it is an inning and two-thirds, two home runs, a pass ball, five runs, four hits, two walks, a K, a hit batter, shortest postseason start in Blue Jays history. Can you say any more than that? We said it before. Everybody said it here. Everybody said it on other shows. R.A. Dickey had to show up and go really deep in this game. We know the weakness now is the bullpen. You have to get it to certain guys or you don't really have a shot. R.A. Dickey needed to do that, and he didn't. And, you know, you can say it any way you want. The knuckleball, he wasn't throwing it for strikes. To me, you have to give a lot of credit to the Royals. They were doing a lot. You know, you got guys doing everything they had to do to get a lead. Morales is getting a guy over with nobody out. He's got 22 home runs and 106 ribbies in the first inning. He's getting a guy over. He's giving himself up because he knows a four-run lead's better than a three-run lead. You know, sometimes you just have to step back, look at the whole situation, and take your hats off to a team 1-9 that's better than you are right now, plain and simple.
And it's funny. I made the point on Twitter that I remember watching R.A. Dickey throw his first bullpen session, the first spring training with the Blue Jays, live batting practice. And Brett Laurie was the third guy he faced in that group. Laurie took his first hacks, never seen a knuckleball.
No.
Couldn't make contact with it.
Most people can't.
The next time he moved up,
smart,
started making contact. Then what he started doing is actually standing back in the box and stepping forward when the pitch was delivered. And I remember, and there was myself, I don't know how many writers are around there, because I was doing a story on how these guys were going to, you know, the knuckleball and adapt to it. And I remember R.A. Dickey, and I walked around the cage, and he came over to Brett, and he said, you moved up on me. And Brett said, yeah. And R.A. said, that's exactly what you have to do to hit a knuckleballer, and it amazes me how many guys don't do that. What does Elcides Escobar do yesterday? Second pitch of the game. You can see it on TV. Moves up.
Don't think that was planned, huh? That he planned that, you know, I'm gonna see the first one, and then I'm gonna try and lay one down to get something going, get a little pressure on everybody.
Yeah.
You know, the first two guys are 16 for 33 with 13 runs and two strikeouts. That's one apiece.
That is remarkable.
That's the first. I'm going to say this. If you have any chance whatsoever, if you're the Blue Jays today, Estrada has to get these first two guys out. He has to. That's what I say. You throw the kitchen sink at them. Sometimes you try and get the feel of the game, and you may try and work in a bunch of fastballs. Estrada's his best pitch is changeup. You got to use it. If you have to use it 10 times the first two batters, you use it.
And it's not just Elcides Escobar. I mean, look, I said going into this series, I picked him as one of my guys to watch on Sportsnet.ca. I talked about it before the game here. Ben Zobrist he deserves a spot in the pantheon of Blue Jays killers because he hits this team in this ballpark. I mean, you could play the game in freaking Mars, and Ben Zobrist is going 2-for-4.
He's got an idea
with a hit.
That's
the
only way
really
he can say.
Does. He is a good player. I don't care about his numbers this year. I don't care whatever his numbers were. He was a good player.
7-for-18 with 7 runs and a K. I mean, if that doesn't say a whole lot for the table setters. You talk about table setters all the time and guys putting pressure on, and you can feel it. When Escobar got the bunt single, it sort of deflated the entire, you know, the one dugout was pumped up and saying, here we go again, and everybody else, even in the stands, were going, oh, here we go again. It's, you know, you get to just little things that guys are getting guys over that hit a bunch of home runs because they know the situation and they can do it right now. I think that's it. When you're swinging this often and this early, you have to have confidence in doing that. You have to know it's all fine and dandy. You swing at the first pitch and you get 8 ground outs for outs, but you're swinging at 8 first pitches and you get 6 hits.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of confidence. You have to have a lot of confidence. And One through nine in that lineup, there's no give. They're often and early getting the foot down and getting it singing. And
there was a lot in that first inning. You knew it wasn't going to work out. The first walk for R.A. Dickey in four starts, that to Lorenzo Cain. The first stolen base R.A. Dickey's allowed since July 4th, that to Lorenzo Cain. I mean, on every level, Kevin, this was a total, complete meltdown.
They knew what they had to do.
Now, let's move to the bullpen use. And a couple of things that we need to be said. One, Aaron Loop was not available yesterday. He left the team before the game to attend to a family situation. We're not going to get into that. All I will tell you is
He wasn't available,
and it was
noticeable.
There ain't a human being on the planet who wouldn't have left the team to be in that to be.
Oh, we don't even. That's not situation. Even a conversation. So we don't have that conversation.
We're not having that. So No. Let's. But I'm just throwing that out there because I know there are people that are going to think that. So we're not going to go there. No. Aaron Loop is not available. So you don't have your lefty in the bullpen. Of course, you know that Brett Cecil's not there. We can assume that John Gibbons doesn't want to go with Aaron Sanchez and Roberto Osuna. And maybe we know that there's talk about Osuna having an issue with his nail. Sanchez has a blister. Of course, both of those guys are telling everybody, no, it's okay. It's okay.
Of course they are.
But so that's on the table. No Sanchez, no Osuna. Nobody has any problem with that. The question I have for you, Kevin, 5-2, and Liam Hendricks has pitched. He has pitched his ass off. I mean, I'll tell
Great
you what.
Job.
To me, Liam Hendricks gets a contract with this team next year solely. And I'm being a little hyperbolic here, but solely because of that.
Every team needs a long relief guy.
Because of what he showed me, I'm giving that guy a contract
sure.
next year. And I'm sure there'll be some talk about that anyhow. But 5-2, why LaTroy Hawkins and not Mark Lowe? Because to me, that is the question more than anything else, is you still got a chance at that point. Mark Lowe, I think we would both agree, has been better than LaTroy Hawkins. Why go to LaTroy Hawkins?
I think Lowe is running a little bit on fumes. You can hear it even on TV when he's pitching, he's grunting. That's never a good thing. He never does that. Looks like he's trying to overpower the baseball, trying to get a couple of miles an hour on the baseball to throw strikes, to get guys out efficiently. It's a three-run lead. Say what you want. LaTroy Hawkins, I think, was brought here for that reason. And I've said this before when this started. You're going to need all guys in that bullpen to get a key out or key outs sometime in a playoff series. Well, that was LaTroy Hawkins' time, and he didn't do it. It's, you know, you can't use those three guys all the time. Mm-hmm. It's whether you want to or not. Perfect world, yes. You run them out there three times every day, all day. But sometimes the way a guy feels and the way he's throwing and you know, I always say managers and pitching coaches know players a lot better than we do. I think this is one of those situations where the three guys you just mentioned, whether we know about the fingernails and the fingers or not, the manager knows those two guys better than we do and knows Lowe better. Mm-hmm. If John Gibbons thought Lowe was ready to go and 100% and wasn't on running on fumes, he would have been the guy. It was, to me, that's plain and simple. You need a 20-year veteran to come out and get a couple of key outs to give you a chance. I mean, first of all, I'll say this. It all gets back to the R.A. Dickey start. He has a better start. We don't have this conversation.
Yep, agreed.
He did 100%, not. He 100%. Did not. You know, we consider and argue this point about the why you bring in Hawkins. To me, it's experience. There'd be one time in this playoff series, and I said this when it started, every guy's going to have to get the key out. Maybe not Tapera. He's here because of no Cecil.
Okay.
We can say that. And he was brought in the game because the game was out of hand. That's the way it is. But you got a 20-year veteran that needs – I'm a guy that knows baseball and has been around, knows how hard it is to play. Sometimes you need a guy to step up and get it done.
Mm-hmm.
LaTroy Hawkins didn't, plain and simple. John Gibbons is going to give you a chance to do it. He did that. He gave him a chance to do it because he needs all guys sooner than later, one time in a series to do it. That was LaTroy Hawkins' chance, and he didn't get it done. And on the bright side, you have the three guys. Low, I know Low pitched later, but it's going to be all hands on deck. meaning Price, Stroman, everybody's all hands on deck.
I think it's a must win.
But
what you do is one of the two starters, Price and Stroman, if you need them, will be available today. And I think what you do if you're John Gibbons is that, quite frankly, it depends. If you need, for whatever reason, however the game develops, if you need to go to one of those guys, if you need it at a time when there's a left-hander coming up, then Price is your guy.
Well,
if you need it
tomorrow.
when there's a run of right-handers, then Stroman's your guy.
You didn't like my answer about the bullpen, did you?
Yeah. No, I get, and you're right. It's a postseason. Somebody, at some point, everybody in the bullpen is going to have to get a big out in the postseason. I cannot disagree with you. Whether it's the ALDS, the ALCS, the World Series, at some point, everybody in that bullpen's got to get
before
a big out.
Before you go on, no Brett Cecil caused this situation. If there was a Brett Cecil,
100%.
We wouldn't be having this conversation because he would have been pitching all of these spots.
Although the only thing is, I don't know if Brett Cecil's as much of an issue yesterday, because you would still have probably gone with Liam Hendricks. You're not going to go with Brett Cecil
Yeah, because he's not going to go three.
But if Liam gives you that and it's 5-2 or 5-2 is the score, then maybe you can do it. And quite frankly, if you've got Brett Cecil, Aaron Sanchez is more rested. Mark Lowe is more rested if you have Brett Cecil. So that's all true. And I get the numbers suggest that when Kansas City's got that lead, it's done and dusted, and they've got the great bullpen. I get all that. But part of me still thinks 5-2, I'm not using Sanchez. I'm not using Osuna. I'm keeping them for this game.
Don't really want to use Lowe.
But I got 5-2. I've seen a game where my team basically out of it in the first inning. I got a guy come in who gives me a chance. I've got a chance still at 5-2 because we've seen the Jays put big runs together against Kansas City Royals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking at that point, I got to go with Mark Lowe for an inning. I'll give him an inning. If we get out of that inning and it's 5-2, my guys come up and they go down 1-2-3, then I go, okay, now we're talking what? Now we're talking 5-2 in the seventh inning or whatever. Now I'm saying, okay, this is a different situation. I give my guys one more chance. And that's the only second guess I have of the situation.
I think if every guy, the three guys you just mentioned were 100% and you could pick from one of the three, yeah, Lowe would be the guy. Obviously, Gibby and everybody, they're not idiots.
They didn't.
Everybody
there.
Makes the decision is under probably knows a little bit more than we would know. And I'm just saying, sometimes you do things for a reason. And I said this when this started. Everybody's going to have to play a role in something.
Yeah.
Some time of the series, you have to play a role. The Troy Hawkins, that was his time.
Yeah,
and he did.
And it's not like John Gibbons and Pete Walker and Dane Johnson threw a dart against a dartboard to see who were you putting in.
Hey, I'm the first person to criticize people, but...
I am.
Well, yeah.
I am usually.
But I am too. You call a spade sometimes. But sometimes you have to step back and look at the situation and know you have to give this guy a shot to give your team a chance, and then you let the other cards fall where they may. Sanchez would have probably been in that game if it's a one-run game. Of course they would have been. It wasn't you give the other guy a shot, it didn't work out that way. It's luckily, fortunately for the Blue Jays, they could live to fight another day, and now sort of it's set up where you have all hands on deck, and it gets back to how many runs can you score?
Well, and there are people out there, somebody on Twitter just said Todd Bryson, Barker might be making sense if Gibby didn't have Lowe throw 20-plus pitches after Hawkins so predictably imploded. The problem is, and this is where I understand why John Gibbons used Mark Lowe at that point.
Who else are you going to pitch?
There's nobody left.
You ain't going to pitch the other two guys.
Sanchez or Sue's not going to pitch. Unless you go with your position player in that situation. But now we're talking about, and people need to keep this, now we're talking about using a position player.
Come on, in the eighth inning.
I can't see that. I don't. God, we could still be playing that game right now, to be honest. So that's our thoughts on how the bullpen was used. And again, I can see both sides of it. I would have given Mark Lowe that shot, but it is entirely possible that Mark Lowe wasn't ready to go. And again, we don't know this. Mark Lowe may have just taken one for the team yesterday. He may have Gibby May said, we need somebody to get this, to finish this thing. And Mark Lowe may gone, okay, man, that's me. I mean, we just don't know how this transpired. But man, it's to see a position player pitch in a postseason game. And again, I wish if you could have been in that interview room afterwards and seen the look, just the absolute bitter distaste, dislike on Gibbon's face when he walked out of that interview room. Like, that was, using a position player in a playoff game for John Gibbons was really, almost the absolute depths of embarrassment for that man. And I've got to think for that organization. Rob Nyer is a national baseball writer for Fox Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Rob Nyer. He joins us on Baseball Central. Mr. Nyer, thank you so much for doing this. I'm trying to figure out, we've gone back and forth in this show and every show in the city and Twitter and everything about John Gibbons' bullpen use. But bottom line is, it's pretty hard when your starting pitcher does what R.A. Dickey does. It's pretty hard to be managing the game with any sense of direction at that point. I mean, maybe direction's the wrong word. It's pretty, at that point, you're in damage control mode, essentially, aren't you?
Well, sure. And it's not as if anyone thought that the Blue Jays had a tremendous bullpen coming into the series, especially with Cecil out. I think everybody realized that the Royals' bullpen was a real strength, and the Blue Jays, not as much. Not that you expect the Royals to hang 14 runs on you, no matter what happens. But it is baseball. Weird things do happen. And I certainly can't point to anything that John Gibbons has done that would explain why the Blue Jays are down 3-1 in the series.
Rob, Aceides Escobar never ceases to amaze. You know, it seems like when he goes, that entire team goes. He's getting a bunt single off the knuckleball guy to lead off the game. He's 9-for-15 with 6 runs, 5 RBIs. His OPS is 1.446. That's just crazy numbers. Did you have any clue he was that good coming into the playoffs? Because
well,
I didn't.
No, and in fact, I would say that he's not that good. by any reasonable standard, he doesn't have any business being at the top of the Royals lineup. And while it's true that the Royals have a much better record this season when he leads off, he hasn't performed well as a leadoff hitter. They've just won when he's been a leadoff hitter. I don't think there's a connection between those two facts. I just think it's one of those crazy, random baseball things that will happen and justify the decision for Ned Yost. Look, lineup batting orders really don't matter that much over the course of a season. They just don't. What matters is having the right players in the lineup, and Aceides Escobar certainly is the Royals' best shortstop, and he should be playing every day. I wouldn't bat him leadoff, but if you do bat him leadoff, it's not going to hurt you that much.
Do you think people appreciate how good a player Ben Zobrist is? I know the numbers weren't great this year for Ben Zobrist necessarily, Rob, but he's great against Toronto. As I said, if they build a Hall of Fame to Blue Jays killers, Ben Zobrist is going to be in there. He may not have his own wing, but he's certainly going to be in there. Do you think people realize just what a good player he is, though?
I don't think most casual fans realize that at all. He was, for a stretch of about 5 years, one of the best players in the American League.
Yeah,
because not only was he hitting and getting on base, he was also playing quite well defensively, both at second base and in right field. You could argue he was playing at least close to gold glove quality defense at multiple positions, and that's got an immense amount of value. And then if you throw on an extra versatility bonus on top of that, which to my knowledge nobody's ever tried to actually quantify, but there certainly is value there, Zobrist was one of the best players in baseball. I think he's probably come back a notch. As you said, he wasn't all that good this year with the bat, at least not until he joined the Royals, but he is still an immensely valuable player, and I do think that he'll be appreciated. He has been appreciated, and in the future will be appreciated by the cognoscenti but I don't think he'll ever quite get his due among the general public.
Rob, what was, Johnny Cueto hasn't had the best playoffs the last start. We all know what that was. David Price, you can say what you want. He had a better start last time. What is the playoffs doing to their future?
Well, I don't think it's going to hurt David Price at all this winter. I think that at least it's probably always been this way, but I think now more than ever, teams are smart enough to look at the big picture and look at Price's performance and realize that if you give him enough chances in the postseason, he will have an outstanding game. And in fact, he was outstanding, as you guys know, for six innings the other day. And then you had, you know, one inning that sort of blew everything up, but he's still the same guy. I think Cueto is a little more complicated because he struggled after coming over from the National League to the American League, was incredibly inconsistent down the stretch. And, of course, now, this month, nobody has any idea what he's going to do next. I saw just a quote a few minutes ago, Ned Yost guaranteed that Johnny Cueto would be great in his next game. Well, that's sweet, but there's no way that Ned Yost can have any idea what Johnny Cueto's going to do. And I think that's going to be an issue for him. So, look, he is going to be an immensely wealthy person in about a month or two. But he would be even more wealthy if he had pitched well these last 6 weeks, and he hasn't. It's going to cost him.
Shifting focus a little bit, Rob, the NLCS could also wrap up. The New York Mets leading the Cubs 3-0. And Daniel Murphy. I don't know. I don't know where to go with that, with Daniel Murphy. We see this in the playoffs often where a guy just kind of has one of those playoffs where you just kind of shake your head and just, you know, you just ride him and say, let it go. Are the Mets as good as we've seen them be in this postseason? Is this team really that good?
They're really good. I mean, I picked them to go to the World Series a few weeks ago because you can't really look at what the Mets did in April and May and June. That's just not really relevant. What's relevant is the second half when they had Cespedes, when they had David Wright and Travis d'Arnaud back from the disabled list. I mean, it's a different team in some ways. Mm-hmm. But, again, obviously, mostly on the hitting side, because they've had most of these pitchers for the whole season, and of course they've got incredible depth in the rotation with those four young pitchers. But people are going to focus on the depth of the rotation, which is fine. But the Braves had great rotation depth for 15 years, and they won one World Series. There aren't any guarantees just because you happen to have great pitching. You also have to hit, and they've been doing that. They've scored, 13 runs in 3 games or 60, whatever it is, and 13, I think. And that's been more than enough because their pitchers have basically held down the Cubs except for Kyle Schwarber.
Rob, we're going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this as always.
You bet. Take care, guys.
It's Rob Nyer from Fox Sports. And, again, you can follow him on Twitter at Rob Nyer. And, the Mets and Cubs, it's a I called the Mets to win the series. I think I kind of went bold yesterday and said I could see them taking it in 4. I don't know if I really believe that, but wow.
Wouldn't surprise you, would it?
No.
If they did?
No. And they're just, you know what's funny? I'm watching the MLB Network here. Curtis Granderson. I've got a minute here. I want to ask you about this. Curtis Granderson, up until this game, the last game, was in some, I don't know, he had like 7 hits with 2 strikes. He was like 7 for 9 in his last, when he had 2 strikes on him. And actually, I wanted to ask you about, you know, everybody talks about two-strike approach. Talk to me about a 2-strike approach, because it is a rather remarkable number that a guy like Curtis Granderson would be so I mean, he would be so successful with two strikes.
I think so. I think the most important thing with two strikes is swinging at a strike, because most pitchers, when they get two strikes, depending on the count, obviously, you know, 1-2, they try to get you to chase.
Mm-hmm.
It's a harder thrown ball. It's maybe a slider in the dirt. It's a slow breaking ball, bounces in front of the plate. The hardest thing is to swing at a strike. That's simplifying it. The other thing is comfort level. What can you do to put big part on ball? Well, when I did it, I spread out. I took everything out of the equation, meaning all the movement I had before I got to 0-2, I took it away. I spread out. I used my hands. I thought up the middle. I want to hit it right back where it's pitched. That's what Curtis Granderson's doing. And it takes you a while to learn it. Early in my career, I could not do that. Or when you get older in your career and you know what you can do well, you know what pitches you can hit other than other pitches. And that's what I tried to do. I tried to hit it right back where it's pitched and simplify it as best as you can and battle. All three of those things, you got a chance. And when it gets down to it, swing at a strike. Mm-hmm. Sounds simple, but it's harder than it sounds.
Buddy Biancalana has been part of some pretty good Kansas City Royals team. We've talked to him in the past. He's going to join us when we come back, and we'll talk about this year's Royals team. Are they better than last year? And are we seeing signs? Are we seeing things in the way the Royals have played this postseason that suggest to us that the experience of playing in last year's postseason and getting as close as they did to winning the World Series, are we seeing signs that that experience maybe one of the things tipping the odds in their favor in this series? Buddy Biancalana will join us when Baseball Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. We are 4.5 hours away from the first pitch of Game 5 of the American League Championship Series. The Jays looking to avoid elimination at the hands of the Kansas City Royals. Marco Stratta will be on the mound for the Jays. Edinson Volquez for the Royals. The man in white, if you're out there, you need to do a better job than you did yesterday. Johnny Cueto thinks that there's a conspiracy theory.
Of course,
Johnny Cueto's a lunatic. We're going to be joined by Buddy Biancalana of the Kansas City Royals. Before you do that, though, got to read you Derek Holland of the Texas Rangers talking about Jose Bautista in an interview with 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. We tried to get audio of this. It's not available. So keep in mind, this is me reading a transcript, and we're doing this because... well, Derek Holland kind of lights up Jose Bautista's ass, to put it bluntly. Talking about Jose Bautista's bat flip, he's the most animated player I've ever seen. After watching him in the outfield cry about every single thing, it's unbelievable. I don't care if he hits a home run off me. That's fine. I give up home runs. I've struck people out. I do all that stuff. It's how baseball goes. But the way you do it, is he better than the game? Yeah, you lived in the moment. That's great. You hit a home run. Yeah, you can pimp it. That's fine. But the way he did it, I just think that one, that's a bit much. That's cool if you want to stare at the pitcher, because obviously the pitcher made the mistake. If it's me, I made the mistake. You hit the home run, cool, stare at me. I'm going to be the one that's not actually staring at you. I'm going to watch and see how far you just hit it, because that's how I am. I like to punish myself by seeing that. But the way he did it, I don't like it at all. I mean, personally, I don't like him either. Especially after seeing more about him during the game and being out in the outfield and seeing how he complains about every single thing. It's like, no matter what, if you throw anything close to the plate and it's a ball, it's supposed to be a ball for him, no matter what. It's like, we can't have any calls or anything like that. It's always his way. I just don't like that. I'm not a big fan of him. This is also from Derek Holland, and whether he felt that way about Bautista before the American League Championship Series. Before, no. I actually respected the guy. I talked to him. I thought he was a fairly nice guy, and I've never really paid attention to him out in the outfield or the annex that he does, because I'm always, well, either I had to pitch against him, so I'm studying up on what I need to get those guys out. I'm not sitting there watching him throw his arms up and throw his glove down on the ground and dance around in the outfield. I don't see that, and it's kind of a tired act. So I'm just reading that into the public record, that from Derek Holland, absolutely hammering Jose Bautista in an interview on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Right. Will be interesting if they ever are teammates at some point. Derek Holland having his say on Jose Bautista. Buddy Biancolan is a former shortstop with the Kansas City Royals. We've had him on before. As a matter of fact, we had him on last year. Buddy Biancolan joins us on Baseball Central. Hey, buddy, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. I got to tell you, I was impressed with the Kansas City Royals last year. I gave them credit. I loved what they did. I loved how far they got in the postseason. But I got to tell you, I plead here. I didn't think they were as good as I've seen them be in this series against Toronto. Are they actually a better team this year, buddy, than they were last year?
I wouldn't say that. I just think there's some resiliency that this club possesses, and they're really showing it right now. I'm surprised, even though I'm an ex-player, I'm surprised that they've been able to play this well in the postseason after playing so poorly in September. I believe they were 11-17 or something like that in September, and to be able to turn it back on, that's not an easy thing to do. So these guys are evidently pretty unique guys, pretty special guys, and however, I do think they're vulnerable.
Buddy, how much credit do you think Ned Yost should get for the little bit of turnaround in the playoffs, the hot little run they're on?
Well, listen, it all starts at the top, and you've got to have a guy in that dugout who is positive, who can kind of move through the ups and downs of a season and certainly in the postseason. And you know, watching Ned this year in his interviews, I just think he's just much more comfortable and much more confident in himself and probably his ball club as well than he was a year ago.
In conversation with Buddy Biancolan on Baseball Central, it also seems as if Ned's gone, Buddy, from being a guy almost like the mad professor of managing, a guy whose every single move was criticized, to a guy who now when he makes a move, it's almost like people, instead of going, my God, what's Ned Yost doing? Now they're going, hey, Ned Yost is doing it, man. It's got to be right. It really is remarkable what a little success does for a manager, isn't it?
Well, you never see the jockey carry the horse across the finish line.
No, you know, it's funny that happens.
He's obviously good. Listen, Bobby Cox in Atlanta was a great manager, and that's, you know, Ned learned a lot under Bobby, and he's got great players. So nothing against Ned Yost, because he's done a tremendous job. And yes, he was questioned, just about every move he made last year. And this year, everything's working. He's got great players. He's got a great bull. And here's the thing: as far as managing the big leagues go, the toughest thing is, one, you know, managing the different personalities, and two, managing the bullpen. And he's got great guys, and he's letting them play. And he's got a great bullpen, and he's got a systematic approach to using the bullpen, and it's worked very well for him for a couple of years. It's great.
Buddy,
here's the thing. I got to say this. I think they're vulnerable, though. They're not throwing a ton of strikes. And when you're playing the Toronto Blue Jays and you're not throwing a ton of strikes, you walk a couple guys, you get an error, a hit, and a big bomb but from one of these guys, and they're right back in the whole series.
Yeah. What explains the Jays' approach then? Because, you know, this is a team. The Jays hit a lot of home runs, but they'll walk now, too. I mean, they've got guys who'll walk.
Yeah, they do, and the Royals, they're not throwing a ton of strikes. So as far as I can't answer the Jays' approach. I know they've got really good players, and they've got some guys who can really light it up, as we saw. I guess that was game three,
mm-hmm.
So they're capable of doing that any time, and certainly at home more so than on the road. But they're a good ball club, and if they pitch a little bit better and get a couple timely hits, this thing could turn around quickly.
You know, buddy, you were a guy, I mean, people will remember you as a shortstop, but you could play a couple of positions. How impressed are you when you see a guy like Ben Zobrist? And, you know, I know Ben's numbers aren't necessarily as great this year as they've been in the past, but my goodness, this is a guy who can play probably play seven positions. He gives you more than adequate defense in about five of them. And, I mean, we know in Toronto he wears out the Blue Jays. He's done that when he was with Tampa. But he's such a good addition for that team, isn't he?
Oh, he's great. A guy like Ben Zobrist is a manager's dream because, again, he can play so many different positions, and you know, he can spell guys who need a day off, and you don't lose much offensively. He's just not a guy who can go out there and play well defensively, not hurt you defensively, but he's a guy that can contribute offensively. So, you know, he's a very, very valuable commodity, and I know, you know, although the Royals are playing him primarily at second base because they had a little bit of a hole there. But he's been a great player for a long time, and you can't say enough about that guy.
Buddy, the approaches we saw, you talk about the approaches that the Royals have. They take the three strike. You have three strike, three swings to a whole different level. Who do you think gets credit for that? You know, we talk about that. There's not a whole lot of teams that use the three strikes, meaning, you know, if I get a strike, I'm going to swing at it. If I miss it, I get another one, I'm going to swing at it. The Royals just keep doing that 1-9. Who gets the credit for that on that team?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the team that well. I'm not overly close with the Royals. But they've done a great job of drafting. The Royals have had a real plan of developing through the minor league system. They've signed a few free agents here and there and made some great trades. So, you know, it's a combination of people. You can never say there's one person responsible for anything in an organization. You've got to have a group of people that can create a culture that breeds success. And certainly the Royals have done it. They've just done a tremendous job. And what's so impressive, again, getting back to my statement earlier about how these guys have been able to turn it on in the postseason after not playing well in September, that says a lot about the makeup of these guys. That's not an easy thing to do, to not play well, and all of a sudden you're in pressure-packed games, and you're turning it back on. That is a very, very difficult thing to do. And, you know, I'd love to look back at teams that went 11-17 in September who have gone on to play very, very well in the postseason. That's a stat that someone else has to take the time to figure out. I'm sure someone will. But that says a lot about the character of these guys and really the character of the whole organization, in my opinion.
Buddy, we're going to let you run. I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you, as always. Good to talk to you again.
All right, guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's Buddy Biancalana, former Kansas City Royals shortstop. It's like, you know, when you have maybe more baseball than any other sport, maybe basketball to a certain degree, you got guys and teams you just kind of from a distance. They were never your favorite players, but you kind of liked. Buddy Biancalana's the guy who was just kind of, those bench guys you just kind of like. I have no idea why that is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like that, though. Here is your lineup for the Toronto Blue Jays and the Kansas City Royals. Travis McKenzie just dropping off. Dan Iasona's behind the plate, by the way, which is pretty good because he's actually, this has been a pretty good throw kudos. This has been a pretty decent umpiring career. I mean, Laz Diaz's strike zone was a little odd, but it was consistently odd. So, Dan Iasona has home plate today. The lineup for your Kansas City Royals, Alcides Escobar, who will likely swing at the first pitch. He is leading off. Ben Zobrist, who's hitting second and will likely hit a home run, at least get a double, drive in two runs. He's batting second. Lorenzo Cain is third. Eric Hosmer's fourth. Kendrys Morales is fifth. Mike Moustakas is sixth. Salvador Perez, I don't know. This guy, they may need to wheel him out of the ballpark when the season is over in an ambulance, because I've never seen a guy get beaten up the way he does. Salvador Perez is hitting seventh and catching. Alex Gordon is in left field and hitting eighth. Alex Rios, your favorite player, is in right field. Be gentle with him, folks. He's in right field and batting ninth, and Edinson Volquez is on the mound. He'll be looking for the man in white. Ben Revere is leading off for the Toronto Blue Jays, followed by Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Chris Colabello, Troy Tulowitzki, Deonor Navarro, Kevin Pillar, Ryan Goins, Marco Estrada on the mound for the Blue Jays. Jays looking to avoid being eliminated first pitch at 4:07. That's it for us. For Buddy Biancalana, Rob Nyer, and Kevin Barker, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us on Baseball Central and Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. We will be back tomorrow, and my guess is we're going to be talking about a Blue Jays victory. How's that for going out in a lid? Take care, everybody.